The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Now on 960 The Patriot, it's the Middle East Radio Forum, your chance to talk about the turmoil in the Middle East. To call in live, dial anytime at 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Outside of the Valley, call toll-free at 888-960-9696. Questions are also welcome at radioforum at AOL.com. That's radioforum at AOL.com. Now your host for the Middle East Radio Forum, David Rothschild.
Welcome. This is the Middle East Radio Forum. This is David Rothschild. And today's guest is Carl Goldberg, who will be talking about the unreported true history of the Israel-Israeli conflict, the Israeli-Arab conflict, and talking about how there's a lot of misunderstanding with regards to terms, and he'll be explaining those. But first, we're going to be talking to Yoni T with his take for the week. Yoni, are you with us?
I am, David. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are things there?
Oh, don't even ask.
I ask. You got to tell me.
Yeah, the war is going okay. Not as good as it could. We caved to the pressure from a certain country. And as a result, we're getting more of our boys killed, and it's taking longer, and it wouldn't be the way I'd fight it, because I'd fight it in a way that it should be fought. But such as
you mean to win?
Victory is the only thing that interests me.
That's why people fight wars, is because they've tried every other solution and they've gotten to the point where it's irreconcilable except by warfare. And the only reason you fight a war is because you have to, and you have to win.
Yes. Yes, we do. We have to win, because if we don't win this war, I'm afraid for the future.
I read something interesting over the course of the week about thinking about that there's only 25 miles of Gaza, but there's 450 miles of tunnels. And these are all concrete reinforced tunnels. So basically, this has been, the entire area of Gaza has been turned into a fortress front ground for a base for attacking Israel. The entire thing is like Ibn Emael or the Maginot Line, except built for as a base for offensive purposes. And it's just shocking that this has taken place.
Before I get into my comments, I'll just say I was talking to a friend of mine who's in Gaza, and he was in shock because these tunnels exist on a multi-dimensional basis, meaning they've even thought ahead to the potential of Israel flooding the tunnels, so the tunnels go up and down in an effort to keep the water from flooding the whole tunnels.
Yeah, it's a fortress. It's a fortress built for the purpose of attacking Israel.
Yep.
So what do you have for us this week, Yoni?
I remember my time as a deputy in the United States. While working in patrol, we had what we called our frequent flyers, homes that had problems with domestic violence. Some of these homes got a visit as often as several times a week. The vast majority of these calls involved men being violent toward their wives or girlfriends. But did she ever learn? Of course not. She suffered from battered wives syndrome. Let us review for a second the history of the relationship between the USA and Israel. In 1973, Kissinger told Golda, "You dare not engage in a preemptive attack like Israel had done in the Six-Day War." It must be noted that the Mossad had an insider in the Egyptian government. President Nasser's son-in-law, Ashraf Marwan, was feeding war information to the Mossad. The attack on Israel was supposed to be a two-prong attack with Egypt and Syria. The problem was that Syria didn't get its military act together, so Marwan informed Israel several times of different start dates for the war, but the Syrians just couldn't get to the party. This led to idiots, and yes, I'm using the word on purpose, idiots, in IDF intelligence to discount him as a source. It must be noted that a former head of Amman, IDF intelligence, after the war, outed Marwan, and he was thrown from a great height to his death. But let us remember that by the end of the war, the IDF was in Egypt and had the 3rd Egyptian army surrounded, and it was that self-hating Jew, Kissinger, that put pressure on Israel to save the Egyptians. Then time marches on, and we come to the Camp David Accords, which gave the Egyptians the political victory that they never could have gained on the battlefield. October 7th and the buildup of Hamas over the last 19 years could not have happened without the stabbing in the back without the stabbing in Israel's back by the USA, and of course, Bibi holding the Prime Minister's office for most of that 19 years. In 1982, the first war in Lebanon, Arafat and the PLO was rescued by a Republican administration. Reagan was no tough guy. He never avenged in a proper manner the deaths of the Marines. No saving of Arafat and the PLO, no peace BS called Oslo, no two intifadas. So, in by a bipartisan manner, a Republican saved Arafat, and later a Democrat named Clinton was a partner to push Oslo. Let us jump to today. The USA is psycho. On one hand, giving us weapons, and on the other hand, failing to understand that Hamas and the Palestinians are one and the same, both in Gaza and Judea and Samaria. The Americans say UNRWA is a good thing. Let me tell you, back during the intifadas, we caught terrorists in the back of UNRWA ambulances more times than we could count. I was involved in it twice. I also, as a joke, applied to UNRWA for an assistant director of security at the Jerusalem UNRWA headquarters. They replied back, they don't hire Jews. I still have the letter. In UNRWA, schools that have turned several generations of Palestinians into zombie Jew haters. That resulted in the rape of men, yes, I said the rape of men, women, children, and babies, and yes, babies, on 10-7, plus, of course, an orgy of murder. Now, Brandon and his self-hating Jews are pushing to create a Palestinian state in Gaza, Judea, and Judean Samaria. Are you seeing it yet? A history of domestic violence where Israel wins on the battlefield and our abusive husband gives away our wins on the field of cheap words with liars and murderers, which the U.S., regardless of which party is in the White House, takes as truth carved in stone. Now Biden has held back rifles that we need for the quick reaction forces in the Moshavim, settlements, and kibbutzim. Of course, a Marxist administration that has a quisling capo as the head of the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms that wants to take away guns from the American people would not be pro-gun. Lastly, Biden has sanctioned 4 Jewish settlers. Let us be honest. The IDF, the Border Police, and Shabak, under the guidance of the Prime Minister, has done a terrible job in protecting Jews living in Judea and Samaria. It just came out. Yinon Levy, who was one of the 4 Israelis, a simple farmer. Let's be honest, that's all he is. He's a simple farmer. He's one of the 4 Israelis targeted by U.S. sanctions, was notified by Bank Leumi that his bank accounts have been frozen. Shame on you, Israel. Shame on Bank Leumi. To hell with Biden and his Marxist self-hating Jews that sit together with anti-Semites in the most corrupt and immoral Brandon administration. Close to 3,000 terror attacks last year in Judea and Samaria. That's the reality. Doesn't sound like protection for Jews to me. So a Jewish man, a real man, not a shtetl Jew, not a ghetto Jew, not a capo, fights back to protect his farm and his family, and now he's in trouble. I know firsthand that such things are terrible because a friend of mine, Dov Dribben, had a farm in the Hebron Hills, was a victim of theft of land by the Arabs and the theft of sheep. The IDF took away his rifle because he stood up for himself. Then the police took away the pistol that he owned. They arrested him many times because he tried to keep his stuff from getting stolen. They turned a blind eye to the theft of Arabs. Dov was murdered by a gang of Arabs. Why would the state of Israel engage in such behavior? To please our abusive husband, the USA. It makes me sad that no president in the history of the United States of America has ever gotten Africa or the Middle East correct. Israel must divorce, and the sooner the better. sell our weapons to whoever wants them to make up the aid money that we're addicted to. We must stop the battered wife thinking that the punches and kicks from the USA is a sign of his love for us. The battered wife syndrome has taken away creativity and courage from the generals of the IDF and also the members of the Knesset. But before anybody jumps to any conclusion, let me be very clear. The American people are a great people. I am one. And the American people still support Israel. But the State Department and the idiots in the White House are the most naive, stupid, wishful thinkers in the history of the world, and they are getting Jews murdered time after time after time, and it's time we put an end to this abusive behavior.
Thank you, Yoni. I think that naive and wishful thinking is typical. It was typical of previous administrations that you're talking about, or of the American history of the relationship with Israel. But I don't think that's the case now. I think that Joe Biden has
now they're pure evil.
Well, Joe Biden has very little to do with it. This is the third Obama term, and Obama is allied with Iran. And the attacks against Israel and in favor of Arab interests to destroy Israel is a feature, not a flaw, for this administration. And Yoni, if I could guide you to check out the Cassandra Times, one word, Cassandra Times. The first article up, whenever it comes up right now, is an explanation of how the U.S. intelligence services were actually involved in and responsible for the attacks on October the 7th.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I will do it.
All right. Thanks, Yoni, and great hearing from you. Wish the news was better, but good you keep us informed.
Take care.
And so that brings us to our guest today, Carl Goldberg, who is in studio with us, and he's going to be talking about the importance of correctly naming the conflict over Israel. You can't begin to analyze a problem, you can't begin to either tear it apart and understand it or look for solutions until you can correctly name it. And that's what he's going to be helping us do today. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning, David. Glad to be here.
Why is the name we use for the conflict over Israel so important?
Names are extremely important because these words and these names determine how we view the conflict, and if we view the conflict one way, then we support Israel. If you view the conflict another way with a different name, you end up supporting the Arabs and the Muslims. And so it's extremely important, the words that we use. And I would like to for our listeners today to learn to use the proper words in describing the conflict over Israel, and then to take action. And the action that you can take is leaving comments under articles which use the words Palestine, Palestinians, and so forth, which we'll be talking about today. So you need to help educate other people when you yourself understand the nature of the terms that we are being faced with. And so today I want to discuss more in detail the notion of Palestine and Palestinians. And before I do that, I want to very much recommend a book which describes the whole conflict over Israel, and that's a book by Robert Spencer called The Palestinian Delusion. I urge everybody to check that out on Amazon and get it and read it. It's succinct, it's footnoted, it's factual, and you will understand the conflict much better than you probably do now unless you've studied it. So the first item I'd like to talk about is, what is Palestine? Where did that name come from? Well, I think you all know that it was originally the Roman designation for the former Jewish kingdoms of Judea and Israel and the areas of Judea and Samaria. After the Romans exiled the Jews, the Romans renamed that whole area. And they call it Palestine in honor of the Philistines, who were the ancient enemies of the Jews. And so this was a Roman designation, not an Arab designation. In fact, the Arabs don't even have a correct pronunciation of the P in Palestine. They call it Philistine. After the Muslims took over, shortly after Muhammad died in 638, the Muslims took over it, and they created a military district called Philistine, or Palestine. But that had nothing to do with the people there. It was simply a military district and a geographical term.
If I'm not mistaken, the Philistine people are not genetically connected to the Arabs in the region. That the archaeology shows that the ancient enemies of the Jews, the Philistines, they believe were a sea people, and their armor and things resembled that of the Aegean, Greek, Anatolian sort, possibly people who were from Troy.
Yeah, that's my understanding. Also, the Philistines don't exist anymore. They were wiped out, and they had nothing to do with Arabs anyway, because they disappeared long before the Arabs appeared in that territory. So to get back to the area called Palestine, during the time of the Ottoman Empire, that was from 1517 to 1917, 400 years. They never used the word Palestine. This was simply a province of Syria, the Syrian province of the Ottoman Empire, not anything to do with Palestine. The name Palestine came back into use after the British and the French and the Allies in World War I defeated the Ottoman Empire and then destroyed and dismembered the Ottoman Empire, and the British were given the mandate power to supervise the whole area of Palestine in order to create a Jewish homeland. And so it was called the British Palestine Mandate. And what's interesting, the British Palestine Mandate at first included what we now know as Jordan, and then Britain severed that area of Jordan from the Palestine Mandate, which, as I say, was originally intended to be a Jewish homeland. So the Jews originally had a right to settle in Jordan, but that was excluded. And then what we know as Palestine today in the British Palestine Mandate, that is from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, that is what is called Palestine now. But we have to stress that Palestine does not exist. It ceased to exist in May of 1948, when the British gave up the mandate and Israel became a state. Since that time, there has been no country called Palestine. That the Arabs in that area would like to create the notion that there is a Palestine, and if you look at their map.
The authentic Ethiopian restaurant located at 1740 East McDowell in Phoenix is a great change of pace from your ordinary restaurant. Authentic Ethiopian flavors in a comfortable setting will keep you coming back for more. Vegetarian and meat selections will satisfy everyone in your family. You just have to try it for yourself. That's Authentic Ethiopian Restaurant, 1740 East McDowell, telephone 602-252-2286. At Precision Integrative Pain, they have a team of highly qualified licensed providers and staff. Their board-certified physicians and healthcare providers offer same-day appointments when possible and work closely with attorneys and other medical specialists. Dr. Drew Hunter is a highly skilled, double board-certified medical physician who takes his time to offer premium care to his patients. Bilingual services are available. Call 602-688-6884 or visit their website, PIC-AZ.com. Dassault and Macros are my business and personal CPAs for a good reason. Prompt and accurate work means I trust them with all my accounting needs. Conveniently located just off the 51 freeway at 3519 East Shea Boulevard, Suite 122, give them a call and see what they can do for you. 602-996-8885. That's Dassault and Macros, 602-996-8885. Cherry Blossom Noodle Cafe has terrific sushi, salads, rice and noodle dishes, soup, and even great pasta. On the northwest corner of 10th Street and Camelback, it will become your favorite Asian restaurant. A loyal sponsor of Middle East Radio Forum for more than 10 years, it is simply the best place for a great Asian lunch or dinner. That's Cherry Blossom Noodle Cafe on the northwest corner of 10th Street and Camelback. Tell them that William Wolf sent you there. Telephone 602-248-9090.
Watermark Wealth Strategies and Watermark Wealth Planning Offices at 11333 North Scottsdale Road has been a loyal sponsor of this program since its start. They specialize in wealth retention, estate planning, and legacy planning. Watermark has been a leader in the Valley, and its members have been together for over 20 years. Founding partner Carmen Saccone has over 40 years of experience in tax, investment, and estate planning issues affecting retirees and their assets. They offer comprehensive planning that has helped assist families through the process of identifying client objectives and concerns and constructing a strategic plan to address tax, risk, and legacy issues. Consultations are complimentary, and we encourage you to contact Allison Porter at 480-442-3989 to schedule. Securities and advisory services are offered through the LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA/SIPC.
You're listening to Middle East Radio Forum on 960 The Patriot. To join in the conversation, call anytime at 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Outside of the Valley, call toll-free at 888-960-9696. Questions are also welcome at radioforum@AOL.com. That's radioforum@AOL.com. Now your host for the Middle East Radio Forum, David Rothschild.
Welcome back. This is the Middle East Radio Forum, and I am your host today, David Rothschild. Our guest today is Carl Goldberg, and we are talking about the proper terms when we're discussing the conflict over Israel, because if you don't know the right terms, then you don't come up with the right answers or even be able to propose solutions. And in order to understand the right terms, you have to understand the history of the region and where they come up with this term Palestine or Palestinian, which are all artificial because we're really just talking about Arabs who have in territories that have been under control of various empires for various lengths of time. But ethnically and culturally and genetically, these people, there is no such thing as a Palestinian. This is all Arabs that live in the region. Carl Goldberg is talking about that right now, and we're going to pick up where he left off.
What I wanted to say is that there is no factual existence of a country called Palestine anymore since 1948. But the Palestinian Authority would have you believe that Palestine still exists, even though it doesn't. So the question is, what is Palestinian territory? We hear that expression all the time. And when did this territory all of a sudden become Palestinian? Well, the PLO Charter, the Palestine Liberation Organization Charter of 1964, very interestingly, said that the areas of Gaza and Judea and Samaria are not what they want to liberate. So they didn't consider those part of Palestine in 1964. It says, quote, "This organization, that is the PLO, does not exercise any regional sovereignty over the West Bank and the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan on the Gaza Strip." So Palestine is considered an Arab homeland in their charter, bound by strong Arab national ties to the rest of the Arab countries, and which together form a great Arab homeland. So it's not really Palestinian. Now, I want to quote from a number of sources, Palestinian, that is Arab sources, which essentially deny the existence of Palestine. And way back in 1919, there was the first Congress of the Muslim Christian Association, and they met for the purpose of selecting a Palestinian Arab representative for the Paris Peace Conference, 1919, after World War I. And they said, quote, "We consider Palestine as a part of Arab Syria, as it has never been separated from it at any time. We're connected with it by national, religious, linguistic, natural, economic, and geographical bonds." So in other words, even these Arab representatives of that time had no concept of a special Palestinianism for the people living in that area. Now, in 1937, a local Arab leader told the British Palestine Royal Commission, quote, "There is no such country as Palestine. Palestine is a term the Zionists invented. Our country for centuries was a part of Syria." And then later on, an Arab historian, Philip Hitti, said, "There is no such thing as Palestine in history. Absolutely not." And then the British Peel Commission back in the 1930s met with the General Secretary of the Arab Higher Committee, who said, quote, "There is no such country as Palestine. Palestine is a term the Zionists invented. There is no Palestine in the Bible. Our country was for centuries part of Syria. Palestine is alien to us. It is the Zionists who introduced it." So here we have it from the horse's mouth. There is really no such country as Palestine. So now, who are the Palestinians? Well, that depends on who you ask. If you ask the Israelis, they keep using this term Palestinians all the time. They are referring to the Arab Muslims of Gaza, Judea, and Samaria. But if you ask those Arab Muslims of Gaza, Judea, and Samaria and the Palestine Liberation Organization, who are the Palestinians, they claim all of the Arabs and Muslims living in the former territory of the British Palestine Mandate are Palestinians, which includes the Arab citizens of Israel. So for the Israelis, they do not include the Arab citizens of Israel, but for the Arab Muslims in those territories, they do include the Arab citizens of Israel, and this is extremely important. Now, who are the Palestinians? The Hamas minister of the interior about 12 years ago said, quote, "Who are the Palestinians? We have many families called al-Masri whose roots are Egyptian. They may be from Alexandria, from Cairo, from Dumieta, from the north, from Aswan, from Upper Egypt. We are Egyptians. We are Arabs. We are Muslims. We are part of you, Egyptians. Personally, half my family is Egyptian, and the other half are Saudis." So this essentially contradicts the notion that there is a Palestinian people that goes back to time immemorial. So this creates an identity dilemma for Arab citizens of Israel. If the Arab citizens of Israel are in fact Palestinians, what about the question of loyalty? Well, a month or so ago, I listened to a webinar put on by the Arab Center in Washington, D.C., and I asked them a question, saying that, you know, there's an enormous difference between Arab citizen of Israel and Palestinian citizen of Israel. They always use the term Palestinian citizen of Israel. Now, Arab is an accurate ethnic description, whereas Palestinian is really a made-up political identity, implying that these people have a rightful claim on the entire land of the former Palestine and that the Jews don't. And so an Arab citizen of Israel can be loyal to the state of Israel, even if Israel is a state of the Jews, just like many other countries have ethnic minorities within its borders. But a Palestinian citizen of Israel cannot be loyal to the state of Israel. They have to be loyal to the Palestine Liberation Organization and the Palestinian Authority. A couple of days after the massacre of October 7th, there was an Israeli blogger who was an Arab blogger, who wrote, quote, "For the longest time, I struggled with my identity. The Palestinian kid born inside of Israel, like, what, WTF, he said. Many of my friends refuse to this day to say the word Israel. They call themselves Palestinian only. But since I was 12, that did not make sense to me. So I decided to mix the two and become a Palestinian Israeli. I thought this term reflected who I was, Palestinian first, Israeli second. But after the recent events, I started to think and think and think. And then my thoughts turned to anger. I realized that if Israel were to be invaded like that again, we would not be safe. To a terrorist invading Israel, all citizens are targets. And I do not want to live under a Palestinian government, which means I only have one home, even if I'm not Jewish, and that is Israel." And so the notion of Palestinianism, being a Palestinian or merely an Arab living in that territory, has enormous consequences for attitude towards the state of Israel. We now come to a question of when did Palestinians all of a sudden appear, since they never used to be any? Well, we will see that this began to appear under Soviet tutelage in the mid-1960s. And the idea was to reframe the conflict, which always used to be called the Arab-Israeli conflict. But in that framework, the Arabs were the nasty Goliath, and Israel was the David fighting the giant Goliath. But the Soviets decided to turn that around and reframe the whole conflict as a national liberation movement, whereby the Palestinians became the David and Israel became the nasty Goliath.
And this was a tactic that the Soviets at that time were using around the world to spread communism. They would create these national movements of national liberation, whether it was in Africa or South America or Southeast Asia. They would find a group and separate them off, give them an identity, and then label the communist, basically, insurrection as a war of national liberation. So what they were doing with Arafat, who was an Egyptian, was just in line with all of their Cold War tactics at the time. So the Arafat and Palestinian situation was not unique. This was a facet of the Cold War struggle between the United States and the Soviet Union. And we're going to pick up some more of that whenever we come back from the commercial break with Carl. So after the break, we'll pick it up there.
Tokyo Express, next to Cherry Blossom Noodle Cafe on the northwest corner of 10th Street and Camelback, has been serving great food since 1982. A fast food Japanese restaurant at a reasonable price. Take out or sit in and enjoy. Either way, you'll be back for more. That's Tokyo Express on the northwest corner of 10th Street and Camelback in Phoenix. Telephone 602-277-4666. Watermark Wealth Strategies and Watermark Wealth Planning Offices at 11333 North Scottsdale Road has been a loyal sponsor of this program since its start. They specialize in wealth retention, estate planning, and legacy planning. Watermark has been a leader in the Valley, and its members have been together for over 20 years. Founding partner Carmen Saccone has over 40 years of experience in tax, investment, and estate planning issues affecting retirees and their assets. They offer comprehensive planning that has helped assist families through the process of identifying client objectives and concerns and constructing a strategic plan to address tax, risk, and legacy issues. Consultations are complimentary, and we encourage you to contact Allison Porter at 480-442-3989 to schedule. Securities and advisory services are offered through the LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA/SIPC. Gilligan's on Maryland, on the northwest corner of 7th Street in Maryland, is much more than just a great Shell station and mini-mart. Great cook-to-order food, different flavors of coffee and tea, beer and fine wine, including kosher wine, round out a wonderful one-stop shopping experience. A loyal sponsor of Middle East Radio Forum, check them out in the northwest corner of 7th Street in Maryland in Phoenix. That's Gilligan's on Maryland. Phone number 602-277-6269.
Thanks for listening to Middle East Radio Forum. I am your host and creator of the show, Attorney William Wolf. I was awarded the high honor of Trial Attorney of the Year by the Arizona Trial Lawyers Association and have been in practice since 1971. I handle injury and wrongful death claims and do go to court if necessary to achieve the best possible results for all my clients. It is often impossible to achieve full value if your attorney does not have the reputation of being willing to go to court on all matters. The high-volume, impersonal TV and billboard attorneys do not have that reputation. The insurance companies know who is willing to work for full value and adjust their settlement offers accordingly. My office is at 7301 North 16th Street, Suite 203 in Phoenix. My phone is 602-279-1914. I take all claims on a contingent fee basis. Call 602-279-1914. I look forward to meeting you.
You're listening to Middle East Radio Forum on 960 The Patriot. To join in the conversation, call anytime at 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Outside of the Valley, call toll-free at 888-960-9696. Questions are also welcome at radioforum@AOL.com. That's radioforum@AOL.com. Now your host for the Middle East Radio Forum, David Rothschild.
Welcome back. This is the Middle East Radio Forum, and I am your host for this week, David Rothschild. Our guest today is Carl Goldberg, talking about the creation of this concept of Palestinian by the Soviet Union. If you like this kind of content and this informative information that is tough to get elsewhere, but it's all wrapped up here and you can just sit and listen to it on Sundays, then do patronize our advertisers. It's the advertisers who buy space in the show that make this show possible for you to get this information that is so hard to come by. So if you like the show, you like continue hearing it, stop by the businesses that advertise here and let them know that you heard about them on the Middle East Radio Forum, where we can get Carl telling us about the creation of the origin of the Palestinians that really starts at Lubyanka and the KGB in Moscow back during the Cold War. Carl?
Okay, yes, I'd like to continue with this notion of when did Palestinians appear. The fact is that not only did the Arabs not recognize any people called Palestinians, but of course the rest of the world didn't either. In the British Mandate for Palestine, nowhere in there is the word Palestinian to be found. They're all called Arabs. And there was never really a separate political entity among the Arabs called Palestinians until after 1967. And this group was not even recognized by other Arab countries. And so I think it's very important to point out how the Arabs themselves rejected this notion of Palestinianism. They were always Arabs of Gaza, Judea, and Samaria, and never Palestinians. Sometimes these Arabs actually tell the truth inadvertently. In March of 1977, there was an interview given with a fellow by the name of Zahir Mohsen, who was a member of the executive committee of the PLO. And he said, quote, "The Palestinian," and this is 1977 now, "the Palestinian people does not exist. The creation of a Palestinian state is only a means for continuing our struggle against the state of Israel for our Arab unity. In reality, today there is no difference between Jordanians, Palestinians, Syrians, and Lebanese." In Article 1 of the Palestine Liberation Organization National Charter of 64, it says the Palestinian people are an integral part of the Arab nation. And as late as 1996, an Arab Party member of parliament in the Israeli Knesset stated in response to a question about Palestinian nationality, is in 1996, "Well, I don't think there is a Palestinian nation at all. I think there is an Arab nation. I always thought so, and I've not changed my mind." And following the 1948 war, the historian Benny Morris noted that Palestine Arabs were not yet called Palestinians. You remember that the partition recommendation by the United Nations in 1947 talked about partitioning the area of British Palestine into a Jewish state and an Arab state. There was no hint of Palestinian state.
And again, this wasn't unique for that period. This is exactly what the British did in India.
During the 19 years Jordan controlled the area, it was not referred to as an occupied territory. The Palestinians did not demand the end to that occupation or the creation of an independent state. Likewise, the United Nations did not take any action to condemn the land grab. And so before the Six-Day War in 67, when Jordan controlled the West Bank and Egypt, there was never any suggestion on the part of the so-called Palestinians that they wanted independence of their so-called ancestral homeland. And the reason was that the Palestinian nation had not been invented yet. There's an interesting comment by Walid Shubat, who used to be an Arab terrorist against Israel, but then converted to Christianity. He said, quote, "On June 4th, 1967, I was a Jordanian, and overnight I became a Palestinian." Well, that was because Jordan controlled Judea and Samaria, not only controlled, but actually annexed it and made it a part of Jordan. So, are Palestinians a people? Well, why does it make a difference? The reason is that if they are considered a people, Mongolians or French or German or whatever, then they have a right to political self-determination and that they should be treated like other peoples. But in fact, the word Palestinian is nothing more than a geographical designation like Californian. The people in California are not a people. They are simply residents of a geographical area, and that is what the so-called Palestinians are. They are residents of Gaza, Judea, and Samaria, and they consider also the residents of Israel proper to be a part of the Palestinian people. But the Palestinian people, as such, does not exist. They have the same language and culture as the surrounding Arabs, and most of them, in fact, came from Egypt and Lebanon and Syria during the 1930s and early 40s. Interesting to look at the Palestine Basic Law, which is essentially their constitution. They talk about the Palestinian people being on equal footing with other nations. That is essentially what they want. They want to achieve their people's clear national rights. Now, the national rights for Arabs were specifically excluded in the British Palestine Mandate. Only the Jews were given national rights. But in the Palestine Basic Law, which is a precursor to the Palestine Constitution, if and when there's a Palestine state, they want the right to establish an independent Palestinian state with Jerusalem as a capital.
So they're trying to create themselves as a brand new people from whole cloth as an underpinning for their struggle against the state of Israel, when in reality they're just Arabs as with the rest of them. And we'll continue with that idea after the break.
If you need heart surgery, do you choose your surgeon from an ad on TV or a billboard? Of course not. Choosing your accident attorney also should not be done so casually and without thought. I'm William Wolf, creator of Middle East Radio Forum and an injury attorney in practice since 1971. I was awarded the high honor of Trial Attorney of the Year by the Arizona Trial Lawyers Association. I only advertise on this show where you can get to know me and my values. My office is at 7301 North 16th Street, Suite 203 in Phoenix. Please give me a call if you have need for an injury attorney at 602-279-1914. No charge for our first meeting, and I take all claims on a contingent fee basis. Call 602-279-1914. That's 602-279-1914. I look forward to meeting you and working to achieve the best possible results for your injury claim.
Shuttleman Physical Medicine, Chiropractic, and Acupuncture is your go-to medical office in the West Valley. Call 623-214-7600. That's 623-214-7600. With two offices to serve you, there is no reason to stay in pain when Dr. Scheidelman may be able to help you. Call 623-214-7600 for Scheidelman Physical Medicine, Chiropractic, and Acupuncture.
Gilligan's on Maryland, on the northwest corner of 7th Street and Maryland, is much more than just a great Shell station and mini-mart. Great cook-to-order food, different flavors of coffee and tea, beer and fine wine, including kosher wine, round out a wonderful one-stop shopping experience. A loyal sponsor of Middle East Radio Forum, check them out on the northwest corner of 7th Street and Maryland in Phoenix. That's Gilligan's on Maryland. Phone number 602-277-6269.
Thanks for listening to Middle East Radio Forum. I am your host and creator of the show, Attorney William Wolf. I was awarded the high honor of Trial Attorney of the Year by the Arizona Trial Lawyers Association and have been in practice since 1971. I handle injury and wrongful death claims and do go to court if necessary to achieve the best possible results for all my clients. It is often impossible to achieve full value if your attorney does not have the reputation of being willing to go to court on all matters. The high-volume, impersonal TV and billboard attorneys do not have that reputation. The insurance companies know who is willing to work for full value and adjust their settlement offers accordingly. My office is at 7301 North 16th Street, Suite 203 in Phoenix. My phone is 602-279-1914. I take all claims on a contingent fee basis. Call 602-279-1914. I look forward to meeting you.
You're listening to Middle East Radio Forum on 960 The Patriot. To join in the conversation, call anytime at 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Outside of the Valley, call toll-free at 888-960-9696. Questions are also welcome at radioforum@AOL.com. That's radioforum@AOL.com. Now your host for the Middle East Radio Forum, David Rothschild.
Welcome back. This is the Middle East Radio Forum, and I'm your host for this week, David Rothschild. This week we are talking to Carl Goldberg about the importance of correctly naming the conflict over Israel, because important the names of what you call things are important for understanding the history, and understanding the history is important to understanding the nature of the conflict. When we left off, Carl was talking about how the people who are now calling themselves Palestinians are really just are Arabs that are indistinguishable from the rest of the Arabs in the region. And throughout history, at multiple occasions, Carl has been citing, they acknowledge that and stated that for themselves. And Carl is going to continue laying out his case.
Yes, the Palestine Basic Law, again, wants to consider the Palestine people as a separate people. On the other hand, They talk about Palestine in Article 1 as being part of the larger Arab world, and that the Palestinian people are part of the Arab nation. So on the one hand, they want to consider themselves a separate people. On the other hand, this contradicts that they are in fact only part of the Arab people, the Arab nation, which is an ethnic group. And they say that Arab unity is an objective that the Palestinian people shall work to achieve. By the way, Article 3 of their future constitution says that Jerusalem is the capital of Palestine. And by the way, they don't say East Jerusalem, they just say Jerusalem. And Article 4 says that Islam is the official religion of Palestine and the principles of Sharia law shall be the principal source of legislation. Now, we've mentioned before about the member of the Executive Committee of the Palestine Liberation Organization, who in 1977 said that the Palestinian people does not exist. And it's worth repeating that he says the creation of a Palestinian state is only a means for continuing our struggle against the state of Israel for our Arab unity, and that there's no difference in reality between Jordanians, Palestinians, Syrians, and Lebanese. And only for political and tactical reasons do we speak today about the existence of a Palestinian people, since Arab national interests demand that we posit the existence of a distinct Palestinian people to oppose Zionism. However, he continues, the moment we claim our right to all of Palestine, we will not wait even a minute to unite Palestine and Jordan. So it's important to note here that the Arabs themselves have doubts about the existence of a separate Palestinian people. What they really want is Arab unity and unity of all of the former British Palestine mandate with the rest of the Arab world. So we have now talked about what is the incorrect name for the conflict. Namely, we hear about Palestine-Israel conflict. We hear about Palestinian-Israeli conflict. That is simply not true. And how do we know? Well, we know that, first of all, the conflict always used to be called an Arab-Israeli conflict until the Soviets and Arafat created a Palestinian people to oppose Israel. Well, if it's not a Palestinian-Israeli conflict, what is it? We have, for example, a strange fact that the greatest enemy of Israel, Israel's deadliest enemy, is not even Arab, let alone Palestinian. Namely, it's the Islamic Republic of Iran and their protege in Lebanon of Hezbollah, who are Arab, but definitely not Palestinian. And if you look at the Hamas charter, they do not frame the conflict as a national conflict between a Palestinian people and the Israelis. They framed the conflict as an Islamic war on the Jews. They say that in fact, our quote, our struggle against the Jews is very great and very serious, and that Israel will be destroyed like Islam has destroyed other non-Islamic countries in the past. And so we have to look at the Hamas charter to find the real nature of this conflict, again, which is supported by the facts that the entire Muslim world, almost, has refused to recognize the right of Israel to exist as a Jewish state. And this is first and foremost the Islamic Republic of Iran, but there's also Turkey, which is not in any way Arab, but they support Hamas, they support the Muslim Brotherhood. And by the way, Hamas is a branch, the Palestinian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a worldwide Muslim religious organization designed to create a future caliphate in the world, in other words, to bring the whole world under Islamic domination. Speaking of that, the Islamic Republic of Iran, which promises to wipe Israel off the map, says in its own constitution, they announced to the world that they're going to use their armed forces to spread Islam to the rest of the world. So I would like to leave you with the parting thought that the proper name for the conflict over Israel is an Islamic war on the Jews and not an Arab-Israeli conflict, and it's not certainly not only a Palestinian-Israeli conflict. That is a subset of the Islamic war on the Jews. And that, of course, comes from Islamic doctrines, straight from the Quran, which requires Muslims to make war on the Jews and subjugate them to Islamic law. And so my advice to everybody here, never use the word Palestinians except in quotation marks, or if it's oral, then say so-called Palestinians. Because, in fact, these people are not Palestinians. They are Muslim Arabs from Gaza, Judea, and Samaria. And so Israel's local enemies are no more Palestinians merely because they call themselves that than a biological male is a woman merely because he calls himself that. Israel's enemies are Arab Muslims, some of whose ancestors lived in the territory of the British Palestine Mandate. They were not Palestinians then, and calling them that now only helps to legitimize their claims to be the rightful owners of the entire territory of the British Palestine Mandate from the river to the sea, which excludes Israel and the Jews. So if you have to use the word Palestinians, at least put it in quotes or add so-called Palestinians. Please, whenever you hear people refer to the Palestine-Israel conflict or Palestinian-Israeli conflict or Palestinians, correct them if you have a chance to do that. If you're attending a webinar, submit a question about the so-called Palestinians as opposed to merely Arabs. If you are reading an article on the Internet, there's often a place for readers to leave comments. If the article mentions Palestinians or Palestinian-Israeli conflict, please correct them in a comment under the article so that you will be able to educate the other readers. Letters to the editor will also do. They might actually publish it. So wherever you go, try to educate people, because if you don't, this notion that there is a Palestine people which has a right to all of the territory of the former British Palestine Mandate, that will become dominant, as it has in fact become dominant in the media, because the media picks up what the Muslims themselves say, and they Muslims have made it a propaganda term to be adopted by the whole world, and of course they've influenced the United Nations to recognize the existence of some sort of Palestine, although the government is not clear and the territory is not clear, but supposedly there is a Palestine state that is an observer member of the United Nations and is a member of various United Nations or sub-organizations. So please, we have to do our best to counter this notion that there is a Palestinian nation and that there is a Palestine, because the notion of Palestine, and if you look at the Palestine Liberation Organization and the Palestine Authority, if you look at their maps, there is a Palestine. They call Palestine the entire territory of the British, former British Palestine Mandate, and there is no Israel. So their notion of Palestinian excludes the notion of Jewish Israel. We need to understand that, and we need to oppose that wherever it is possible to do so.
And again, this is for people to put into context. This is not the only place this has happened, and it's useful for you to be able to know and explain to other people that all of the British colonies, whenever they were released, went through basically a reconstruction as the British tried to create countries out of what had just been colonies. And what was done in Israel is nowhere different than what was done in the British colony of India. So the entire subcontinent was called the British colony of India. And whenever the British withdrew and gave them independence, the Muslims couldn't get along with the Hindus. And so they split it, and they said Pakistan is the Muslim part of the former British colony of India, and what we now call India was the Hindu, Sikh, and all the other religions had India, and so it was divided into two parts. The Muslims got Pakistan, everybody else got India. The exact same thing was done in Israel. So this was the British colony of Palestine, which was a territory that they had captured from the Ottoman Empire. And whenever they were pulling out, they divided it. So they said, Arabs, you get the big part, okay, which they called Transjordan, which is now Jordan and the West Bank. And they said, Jews get this part, which they call Israel. And it wasn't just Jews. It was Christians or anybody that wasn't a Muslim Arab were given Israel as a Jewish homeland. But the whole area was the British colony of Palestine. And it was split in two parts. Arabs got Jordan. Jews got Israel. And now for the Arabs who had lived in wherever that they were, in parts that were now Egypt, parts that are now Jordan and so on, for them to suddenly declare themselves Palestinians as an independent people is ridiculous, as Carl has just pointed out. But it serves a purpose. It serves a political purpose. And that was to undermine and destroy the state of Israel. And this is yet another artifact of the Cold War. Carl, we'll talk about Arafat. Arafat was actually an Egyptian lawyer, right?
Yes. Was he a lawyer or engineer? I forgot.
I know Castro was a lawyer, and I can't
Castro
remember.
Castro was a lawyer, yes.
I can't remember if Arafat, but he
yes,
was
he,
actually
he was
Egyptian.
Egyptian. He was born, I believe, in Cairo.
And so he wasn't even somebody that was from that area, and yet somehow or other through the KGB's efforts, he becomes the creator and founder of.
I believe his family came from the British Palestine area. I think he was even a relative of Hajj Amin Hussein Husseini, who was the Muslim Mufti, leader of the Muslims in British Palestine, who became an ally of Hitler, by the way. I think it's you're mentioning about India and Pakistan, which created refugees, lots of them. In fact, there were 7 million Hindu refugees driven out of Pakistan back into India, and about 7 million Muslim refugees driven out of India into Pakistan. Nobody talks about them anymore. In British Palestine, which, by the way, I wouldn't have called it a colony. It was a mandate by the League of Nations, and the purpose of that mandate was to establish a Jewish homeland, which is somewhat different from the colony. Refugees were created, but they weren't Palestinian refugees. They were Arab refugees, and there were somewhere around 500,000 of them or so, far, far smaller than anything that happened after World War II in India, Pakistan, or over 12 to 16 million Germans were driven out of Eastern Europe after World War II. Before World War II, over a million Greeks were driven out of Turkey. So if we look at the number of refugees, the Palestinian refugees are relatively small by comparison. And in fact, there were many more Jewish refugees driven out of the Arab lands after Israel became a state. Nobody talks about them anymore either. The United Nations, under Arab influence, in fact created a special department for Palestinian, so-called Palestinian refugees. We have only a couple of minutes here, but very briefly, there are two refugee bodies for the United Nations. One is UNRWA, which deals with the so-called Palestinian refugees, and the other is for all of the other refugees in the world. So the Palestinian refugees were given special, separate treatment. And the definition of refugee was special for the so-called Palestinian refugees. Other refugees ceased to be refugees as soon as they're taken into other countries and begin living their lives. Nobody speaks of them as refugees anymore. But in the case of so-called Palestinian refugees, it becomes a perpetual inheritance. And so we see today that people talk about millions and millions of Palestinian refugees. In fact, there's only about 20,000 Palestinian refugees, and they're former refugees because they have been living in other countries, whether it's in Gaza or Judea, Samaria, or Lebanon, or Syria, or Jordan. Jordan, in fact, is mostly former Palestinian refugees. So the notion of Palestinian refugee is also phony, just like the notion of Palestine is phony. And we need to recognize that, and we need to be active in helping to educate other people about that. It's extremely important because Israel is losing the propaganda war. All of our journalists come out of journalism schools which teach about the existence of a Palestinian people. They accept the so-called Palestinian propaganda. We need to do what we can to oppose that. And especially we need to talk to our political representatives to educate them, because otherwise they will not hear the truth. They don't have time to study the issue. They don't have time to read the right books, like Robert Spencer's Palestinian Delusion, which, again, I would like to recommend to everybody who's listening to this program.
And an interesting thing that I heard about this recently was, just ask, was there ever a king of Palestine? Was there ever a Palestine general? Was there ever a Palestine army? Where is there ever Palestine archaeology? And there's just no history of it. But the history of Jews in that area is there archaeologically, it's there historically. They're the only native people for that land and have been for thousands and thousands of years. And thank you for listening to the Middle East Radio Forum.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.